The thousands of superhero comic books that Marvel has published since 1961 make up a gigantic mountain that sits smack in the middle of contemporary culture. Every schoolchild recognizes Marvel's protagonists, Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men. 18 of the 100 highest-growing movies of all time, from Avengers Endgame to Black Panther, draw from the Marvel comics. The Marvel narrative is also the longest continuous self-contained work of fiction ever created, over 500,000 pages to date, with thousands of contributors. Douglas Wolk is the author of the new book, All the Marvels, A Journey to the Ends of the Biggest Story Ever Told. A National Arts Journalism Program Fellow and winner of the Eisner Award for Best Comics-Related Book, Wolk is a lifetime comics reader and an expert on all things Marvel, and that knowledge shines through as he tackles the comics world of constant spectacle and drama. Again, the name of the book, All of the Marvels, and we welcome Douglas Wolk to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Very nice to have you and to talk about this subject. So you have read all 27,000 of Marvel's superhero comics. I assume that does not happen by accident.
I just stumbled into it. A few years ago, my son had been reading some comics with me, and he mentioned, I'd like to read all the Marvel superhero comics, Dad. And I was like, all right, yeah, this will last a week. It'll be a fun week we have together. And then 4 months later, he'd read, a giant pile of them. And I was, I wonder what would happen if I read all of them. I wonder what that gigantic 500,000 page story would look like as a story, what it would say about the last 60 years and the world that it was produced in and was born into. And 5 years later, having finally read them all and written the book, yeah, that's what happened.
I know this shouldn't be the first question that comes to my mind, but it is the first question that came to my mind as I was reading the book, which is, so how do you find them all? Where do you get them all? And in what order do you read them in?
So finding them all was not the hard part. Marvel has a service called Marvel Unlimited, which is kind of a Netflix-ish, all-you-can-read kind of thing. They don't have everything, but they have a lot of things. They have most things. There are book reprints. There are original comics. I've been collecting comics for about 40 years. I have friends who had a lot of things that I couldn't find. So that wasn't so hard. The hard part was finding hours in the day to read them all. I did not read them in any particular order. I grazed. I read whatever I felt like on a given day. Today, I feel like reading some Spider-Man. Today, I feel like reading some Monster Comics. Today, I feel like reading some comics drawn by Tom Sutton. Just whatever I felt like on any given day. I had a giant spreadsheet with everything and kept filling in, like, okay, finish this part. And of course, there were a few parts that I was avoiding. And near the end, I was like, all right, gonna have to knuckle down and read some of these. And that's how I ended up locking myself into an apartment for a week and a half and reading all The Punisher.
Why were you avoiding it?
I've never loved that particular character, that particular idea of vigilante violence being the thing that fixes everything the world as it is supposed to take care of but doesn't, so you have to have somebody go out and shoot people. Not crazy about that.
So it's one thing to read them all. It's another thing to try to make sense of it all. So did you do that as you were going through, or was there really a sort of a digestion period where then you came back and said, oh, okay, let me look. This is how I'm thinking about these things.
There was a lot of note-taking. I had a couple tumblers where I just clipped any panel that seemed interesting. One was an all-purpose one. One was one I did with my son, which was anytime somebody said, bah, marvelbah.tumblr.com, just exclamations of bah. But as I read, I noticed patterns, and as those patterns were apparent to me, I kept noticing them more as I was reading. So it was reading and writing and reading and writing and going back and forth.
So bring us to 1961, the beginning, and how Marvel started off and what the goal was in the beginning.
Well, at the beginning, there was no sense of a Marvel universe. There was no sense that this was all going to be one gigantic story. In 1961, at the moment where these superhero comics start happening from the company that wasn't even named Marvel yet, it didn't start using that name until 1963, But at that point, the company is publishing a lot of monster comics, Strange Tales, Journey into Mystery, Tales of Suspense, like Monster of the Month. And they're publishing a lot of comics about teenage girls and young professional women. And they're publishing some Westerns and some war comics and some romance comics and some other stuff. But that's the core of it. And superheroes at that point were out of fashion. Superheroes had started in 1938 with Superman. By 1950 or so, they were really pretty much passé. DC was still publishing Superman and a couple of others. But in 1950, Captain America changed its title to Captain America's Weird Tales and became a horror comic for a couple issues and then died. So in 1961, like, superheroes are not so much a thing. And the artist and plotter and fantastic creative force, Jack Kirby, and the writer and editor, Stan Lee, come up with Fantastic Four, which is a superhero comic that is also a monster comic and also kind of a romance comic and also kind of a humor comic and also all of these other things kind of rolled together, and it catches on. And then there's the Hulk, and then there's Ant-Man, and then there's Spider-Man by the end of 1962, and Doctor Strange, created as Spider-Man, was co-created by another fantastic artist, Steve Ditko. And within a couple of years, by 1964, there's the Avengers, and there's the X-Men, and there's Daredevil, and these characters just keep showing up, and some of them catch on. In the 70s, the line keeps expanding, and eventually we get to where we are right now, where there's, you know, 50 or so new comics every month added on to this half-million-page story.
Douglas Wolk is our guest. The name of the new book is All of the Marvels, A Journey to the Ends of the Biggest Story Ever Told. At the beginning of the book, you have a warning. It is on confusion. You write, you are going to be baffled at first. There's no way around that. It is absolutely okay, unavoidable, in fact, not to get everything that's going on in a modern superhero comic. To not want to fail to understand any part of a story is a reasonable desire on the part of readers. But one of the great pleasures of reading Marvel's comics, is the pleasure of being confused and then finding a way out of confusion. So how do you enjoy being confused?
You enjoy being confused because you have to acknowledge that there's something you don't know yet. There's something you don't understand yet. And you have to figure it out or find a way to figure it out. And at some point, as you're reading something else, as you dig into the story, as you get the clues that the story is dropping for you, you have an, oh, I get it now moment. And really, I get it now moments, they're kind of the best thing, no matter what you're doing.
So, And that never, at least for you, and I guess for most comic readers, it doesn't slow you down in the sense of you have to give it some time, but that's okay.
Have to give it some time, but it's okay. But also, you have to take note of what exactly is confusing you. What don't you understand? Is there a proper name there? Look up that proper name. Is there information that is being withheld by the people who are telling the story? Sometimes that happens. You look at any movie at the beginning, they're not going to spell out everything and have all the characters walk on and explain who exactly they are and what they're doing and how they relate to each other. That's something that's revealed over time. And as you enter the Marvel comic story, that's going to be revealed over time too. If you're lucky, you'll find something that is enough fun, enough spectacle, fun enough to look at and to read that it'll keep you going until the point where you can understand what's happening more instead of just experiencing it as a spectacle.
You also write in the book about that there are these moments in a chapter that is titled The Junction Everywhere. You write about Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's run on Fantastic Four. Why is that a good vantage point?
Well, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's Fantastic Four, they collaborated on a little over 100 issues of it. It was the first of Marvel's big superhero comics, and Kirby was so unbelievably inventive. Every single issue, it seemed like, there was some fantastic new idea, some fantastic new character, and they were all part of the story, but they just kept being amazing things thrown at the audience. And in the middle of it, there's one particular story that I mentioned at the beginning of this sequence, that it's Fantastic Four number 51, and it's got a collage page in the middle of it. And there's a character in the middle of this beautiful abstract photo collage saying that they are at the junction to everywhere. And that's kind of true. If you find yourself in the middle of the Fantastic Four story, you don't have to start at the beginning. It's not expected that you're going to start at the beginning. You can come in the middle, and then there's any number of directions you can go. It is not a linear story. It is a story to be experienced however you like.
You have several interludes in the book. One of them is entitled Lee, Kirby, and Ditko, and you are writing, of course, about Stan Lee and artists Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko. Of course, the name that is most synonymous with Marvel is Stan Lee. Talk a little bit about him and his sort of omnipresence in the Marvel story.
Stan Lee is fascinating. And the Earth Brain, Galaxy Brain, Universe Brain thing. The first thing that you understand when you start getting into Marvel is like, oh, Stan Lee is, you know, the genius behind all this stuff. And then the second level is, oh, Stan Lee is a charlatan. He just ripped off everybody else's work. He took credit for what artists did. And then the level beyond that is to think, oh, Stan Lee actually was a genius, but maybe not for the reasons that we think of. He was an absolutely brilliant editor. He was incredibly good at encouraging his collaborators' creativity. Nearly every artist he worked with in the 1960s, which was really the decade during which he was most involved creatively with Marvel, every artist he worked with during that time took massive, massive creative leaps during that decade. And a lot of them have talked about how he encouraged them, how he egged them on, how he said, like, do it more like yourself. Do it, you know, this thing you're doing, this experimental thing, yeah, push more with that. Go more in that direction. He's incredibly good with words. He did not plot most of the stories. Most of the stories were plotted. Most of the events in the stories were come up with by the artists who drew them, most often Jack Kirby, to the point where Kirby and Ditko, after a couple of years, were not even necessarily conferring with Stan Lee about stories. They were just turning in the artwork, and then he would add dialogue to it. But what he did to it was remarkable and special, and he just his language has so much care and so much play in it that it brought those characters to life. It gave them an extra dimension. And then he also stayed involved with Marvel as a business and became its carnival barker, its spokesperson, its mascot, its symbol. And that overshadows the contributions of the artists and other creators that he worked with. But, you know, he did a lot, and he was happy to take credit for it.
Well, and somebody has to, right? I mean, there has to be the carnival barker. There has to be someone who is the face of the organization.
Yeah, he was also very interested. You know, he loved having his name in lights, but he also dragged the names of everybody he worked with into lights with him. He started putting his name and artists' names on the first page of stories, occasionally even on covers. And it wasn't just like, this is a Stan Lee thing. This is a Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and Joe Sinnott and, you know, Sam Rosner, whoever's lettering it this month. All of those names went in there, and he would talk about them on the bullpen bulletins page, the editorial pages, and make them all presences and selling points.
You get the sense in the book, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, of the industry had its ups and downs, right? I mean, we're looking at a point now where you think about the Marvel name and, of course, the films, but and then early on when they came out and these characters were at their height, if you will, but the comic book market has certainly had its ups and downs.
It definitely has. You know, there was a period in the 90s where Marvel actually went into bankruptcy. Interestingly, the comic book market has been rumored to be collapsing. Well, it's been rumored to be collapsing since 1938, but those rumors are never true. Like, if you look at the actual sales figures from the last few years, there's a lot of comics being sold still. there's some of them are digitally. They are collected into books that can stay in print indefinitely. Like, it just keeps going, and there is no end in sight. The story can't end, and there's something really beautiful about that.
Let's talk about by the way, our guest is Douglas Wolk. His new book is All of the Marvels, Mutants, Monsters, Monarchs, Mystery, as a journey to the ends of the biggest story ever told. Let's talk about Spider-Man. I think arguably, but Spider-Man is the big star, right?
He's one of them. I mean, you can say that Iron Man is the big star. You can say the X-Men are the big star, but Spider-Man, you know, he's special. He's been around for close to 60 years as of this month, and he's got a lot of people's attention.
What is it about that character, do you think, that struck a chord?
The Spider-Man story is always a coming-of-age story. It is a story about how is this teenage boy who has lost everything, who has lost his father twice over, how is he going to grow up? How is he going to become a man? And that's an amazing story. A friend of mine was telling me that he was talking to a 7-year-old a couple of weeks ago who's like, oh, yes, so Spider-Man, like, what's his deal? How did he get started? And he told the story, the lonely teenager, the radioactive spider, the spider bite, the strange powers, the dead uncle, the revenge story, the moment where he realizes that he could have stopped the person who killed his uncle but didn't. And this 7-year-old who was hearing the story for the first time was just riveted. And he was like, yeah, this really is an amazing story. The problem with Spider-Man as a story is that it is a story about a kid growing up to be an adult. And it is also a story that has to go on forever. So in the comics, it becomes the itsy bitsy spider. You know, he gets up to a certain point and then he falls down and loses everything again and has to start over. And that's a cycle that repeats over and over in one form or another for decades and decades of comic stories. The movies have it a little bit easier. They can always just, you know, reboot and cast somebody else as Peter Parker or as Miles Morales.
How different is, and I'm, I mean, I know there's business models and things are different, but as far as the rules, the mission statement of Marvel versus DC Comics?
You know, I don't really get a sense that there is as big a difference month to month as people think there is. I mean, the Marvel versus DC rivalry, I don't want to pick a side. And that's, you know, I like both kinds of music, country and Western.
Right.
But one thing that is different about the Marvel story that I think that makes it special, which is why I wrote about it for this book, is that it does have this history. It has never said, oh, nothing in the past counts anymore, we're starting over. It's got 60 years, or if you prefer, 80 years of backstory, of things that have happened in the past that informed the present. It all holds together as one gigantic thing, and that's incredibly special.
Would, for example, and this may be an impossible question to answer, but given that the big comics headline in the last week has been that Superman has come out as bisexual in a new edition, and would that be something that Marvel would think about to push that edge?
Oh, I mean, Marvel's characters have always reflected the world that they are in. They absolutely have gay and bisexual characters. They have for a while. They're, you know, one of the most interesting comics right now, which is going to be a TV series next year, is the current Ms. Marvel, who is a teenage Pakistani-American Muslim girl living in Jersey City, coming to terms with what her powers mean, what it means for her family, what it means for her community, what it means to do good in the world. And it's a fantastic story. It's an amazing character. And you know, this has always been part of the story, and the more it's part of the story, the more it reflects the world outside your window, as the phrase goes, the better a story it is.
How, for you as a, and you make this point very early on that, you know, you don't have to like everything, you don't like everything, but many of these are really good, and they're not all good, and some aren't even great, but many are. How do you factor in films? How should that fit into the overall Marvel story?
I love the movies. One thing I love about the movies is that they are not overly faithful to the Marvel comics. They treat the comics as an enormous supermarket full of ingredients that they can use and play with and transform as they like. You know, there is not a comic that is like Marvel Vision, because Marvel WandaVision, because WandaVision is specifically a TV show that's about being a TV show, and it works great as that. And that's as it should be. It's different media, and I love that some of the stuff from one medium works really nicely in another one.
The name of the new book is All of the Marvels, and what did your son think of the book?
He's amused. He's amused.
Did he help you keep track of stuff?
He did some. I would occasionally say, like, hey, remind me, like, who did Fantastic Four fight in issue number 11? He's like, the Infant Terrible. Okay, yeah, sorry. Got it.
But amused, not eye-rolling, but amused. That's good.
I hope so.
All of the Marvels is the name of the book, a journey to the ends of the biggest story ever told. It is published by Penguin Press. Douglas Wolk, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Mm-hmm.